If you're hurting someone you love, but you just can't seem to stop because you keep reacting, and maybe you think they're wrong and you're right, so why don't they just do what I want them to do? If that's you, you may not realize that your coping mechanisms are causing you to do behaviors that are not only hurting them, but also disintegrating your relationship. If this is you and you want to heal and change this about yourself, sign up for the first 4 lessons of Healed Being for free over at healedbeing.com. Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now. Hello, this is Paul Coliani, and I want to help you learn the skills you need to deal with life's challenges using emotional intelligence and critical thinking without compromising who you are. This show consists of my personal opinions and is meant for informational purposes only. Always seek a professional for your mental health and well-being. Thank you for stopping by. Thank you for being here today. I've got probably one or two messages I'm going to read and do my best to answer them. I guess Dear Abby style. This is what I do here. I've been doing this for 9 years, if you're just tuning in for the first time. I'm so glad that you're here. My mom actually told me once that I should have a column in the newspaper, but I don't even know. Do newspapers exist anymore? There's so much online now that we need other things going on. But yes, I know. I'm wasting time. I'm going to get right to it. I'm going to pull up my screen here that has a question or two. Here it is. This person wrote, "Please keep my name private." I will do that. I have a friend who I deeply care about. We met during a something for work, and we became good friends, and she started to call me every morning and every night. This is my quiet time, which I very much value. She talks for so long asking me anything, and usually she asks, "Are you still there?" Once I timed it, and she spoke for almost 20 minutes before asking if I was still there. I find this overwhelming and a one-sided friendship. She complains constantly about how hard her life is, when in fact I've given her multiple constructive pieces of advice. And she gave an example, but she gets takeout every night and orders expensive coffee and also buys unnecessary items. I have zero sympathy when it comes to finances when she talks about that. She frequently asks me to borrow money, and I have always said no. And I work hard, and we make about the same, and I guess I don't know what to do. She didn't actually ask a question. I think, her email got cut off. So I have a feeling she's going to ask me what to do. So there's a few things in your email, thank you for writing this, that really, really stand out, especially like when she started calling every morning and every night. You know, that's the first sign that maybe a little too much is going on here. Like, I can't take all my time with you because I have a life myself. This is the first thing I think of if I'm in your situation. In fact, when I call my friends, it's like, this is probably a bad example. Once a week, maybe. Once every 2 weeks, maybe, we talk. Every morning, every night. I have some comments on that, which I'm going to say in a moment, but that stood out. It's like, that's the first thing that I see that I say, okay, I just talked with you and, you know, let's take a break. It's not easy to say that to a friend sometimes, but if they're really a friend, they'll understand. Oh, I got something else to do. Can we talk later? That's great. So I think what I'm saying is from the very beginning, things started happening that weren't addressed. And this is how the downward spiral usually begins. If it's something, or if something is going on that you don't address, what it does is create a foundation for the rest of the time or the rest of the events or behaviors that you don't want to happen. So maybe at the beginning, it was great that you both talked a lot and maybe you enjoyed that with each other. And so maybe that was part of enjoying building this friendship, but you probably had some feelings about it. And if those feelings weren't expressed in some way, then that foundation is created. So that foundation is the most important part of this. And so you're past that now, which makes it a little bit more difficult, Because once the foundation is created, it's hard to take a big step back and say, hey, you know, when we first started talking, yeah, I didn't like that. So I should have said something then, but I'm saying something now. And that's when it becomes harder because now there's a different vibe with your relationship. The vibe is step one was fine and accepted. Step two was fine, or phase two was fine and accepted. I was talking a lot and you were fine with that. I never gave you a break and you were fine with that. I was talking about all my problems, even though I have resources, and you gave me advice and everything was fine with that. So what's the problem now? Why are you bringing this up now? That would be why it's hard to go back in time and try to fix it from the beginning. But it's also why it's so important to address this as soon as it happens. And that means being in touch with your values, being in touch with your boundaries, knowing what's important to you, so that when something gets violated, you don't allow things to go forward without addressing the things, the violations that occurred. If you don't address them, then the foundation is created, and that foundation is made up of what the other person believes is acceptable to you. If you get the idea that I'm talking about any type of relationship, especially romantic relationships, they get more and more difficult. I'm talking about any type of relationship that you have, that once the first violation has occurred that you haven't addressed, it will only get worse because that foundation is created. So if you create a foundation of toxicity, the rest of it gets even more toxic. It gets even more difficult. I know people are relating right now. This is what happens. When you have that kind of foundation, it doesn't get any better. It gets worse. And this is right in alignment with what I talk about with values typically. With values, you ask yourself, what's important to me in this area of life? For example, what's important to me about this relationship? Well, it might be laughing and mutual respect for each other, honesty, sharing our life stories, you know, things like that. But maybe you also value interaction, a two-way conversation. And when that was violated, even though you might not have thought of this consciously, you had the feeling, you had this feeling about it when it started happening. The feeling usually tells you what your values are. Like if you feel like you're not getting the time that you would like to have as a friend, and that feels either disrespectful or like she's crossing your boundary in some way, like steamrolling you or dominating, and that feels like you are being pushed down or squashed, those feelings usually tell you what you value. That's so important to label in your life. Like, what is being squashed right now? When you first start to get that feeling, what is being squashed? What is being repressed or suppressed in me? When I put myself in that situation and the person's dominating the conversation, a one-off is not a problem. If they dominate the conversation and the one-off thing, you know, I call my friend and he's telling me all the problems and all this stuff going on in his life, and I'm just sitting there listening for 20 minutes, I'm going to do that because I'm trying to be unconditionally loving and supportive to my friend. And he probably appreciates that because some other time I'm going to do the same thing to him. So those one-offs are okay for me. I mean, that's within my boundaries and values. But if this happened over and over again, and every conversation was like this, or 99% of them were like this, then I would start to feel like I am not of value to him, that my words, what I share with him, are not valuable to him. And he is very self-absorbed. And I don't want to be with somebody who's self-absorbed and doesn't really want to hear what I have to say, doesn't really care what's going on in my life. I would feel devalued. And so I think I would add a value to my values list about what I want in a friendship. And that value might be being valued. That value might feel like being worthy, or worthy of hearing what I have to say, or feeling important, or feeling significant in this person's life. That's almost every relationship, I think, we want to feel important or significant to someone else. And so I would start to realize that when that value isn't met, that what we have in the current state it's in is not sustainable. And again, this is all about the beginning of when something happens. And so it's easier to address in the beginning. It's like, hey, you know, every time we talk, you don't give me a chance to talk. What's going on? You keep dominating the conversation, and then you don't even know I'm here until 20 minutes later, and you ask me, are you still there? That's hard to say when you're more of a people pleaser. It's hard to interrupt somebody and say, hey, look, you know, you've been talking for 20 minutes. Give me a second. And if they don't want to give you a second, that tells you a lot. But they may even get upset, depending who they are. This person who wrote, she may stop and say, oh, let me share something. And when you start to share something, they, again, dominate the conversation. Or maybe they get upset and they think, it's all about you. This is my time. This is my issue. Let me talk about me. So I'm actually thinking about my girlfriend. She's very good at honoring herself, honoring her boundaries, speaking up. And over the years, I've seen her get really good at this, to the point where she might tick someone off. She might actually make them upset or make them take a step back and go, whoa, what's going on with you? And it's not because my girlfriend's being mean or aggressive or, I mean, it's nothing like that. She's actually being, in a healthy way, assertive. Hey, look, we need to talk about this. And then she will say it. She has impressed me. My girlfriend has impressed me with her ability to speak her mind, but in a way that isn't hurtful to them, but honoring herself. That's what I believe in. You honor yourself with love for someone else. You don't try to hurt them. You don't try to point your finger and say, you're doing this and you're a bad person. You say what's on your mind about yourself. Hey, I feel like you don't really want to hear what I have to say. I want to be here for you, and I'm going to listen to you, and I'm going to give you unconditional support if I can, you know, as much as I can. But it seems like when I start talking, you don't want to hear anything I have to say. That sounds like something my girlfriend would say. It's very direct. Maybe not even as direct as I would be. I would actually find, is this a good way to say it? A more tactful way to say something. A more diplomatic way. And I also have other ways to speak to someone when they are dominating the conversation. Especially in this case. So I'm going to get back to this person's initial request, which I think is, what do I do? I mean, she didn't ask the question. I think the email cut off, but that's the question I'm going to answer. What do I do about this person? What do I do now that this foundation has been established and she sees me as a person that listens and keeps her mouth shut and just waits and waits until she's finished? What do I do? Because that isn't a fun conversation for me. Plus, it's taking up a lot of my time. Plus, she's complaining about a lot of things that I have solutions for and I figured out in my life, but why can't she do these things for herself? Now, another thing that stood out in your email, let's get back to your email, is she said that I've given her constructive criticism. I think this goes nowhere. With a lot of people, this goes nowhere. In fact, I want you to burn into your brain that I am not going to help someone unless they ask. Now, this doesn't mean you see someone hurting and you're not going to help them unless they ask. I mean, some people need help. I'm talking about this friendship that you have. A lot of people will complain and not want the solution. They'll complain because it feels good to release it, to release that emotional energy. But they're not necessarily looking for a solution. It's almost as if they want to own that feeling they have, the victim state that they're in. When they want to own that victim state, it feels really good to a person like that to just vent that out to someone who will listen. And they just want to feel validated that being the victim is okay. Now, I'm not talking about everyone. There are real victims in the world with real issues and real challenges that they can't resolve. And even when you try to give them a solution, even if they ask for it, the solution may not work for them. There are circumstances that definitely don't apply. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who stay in victim mode and will even be given the answer that takes them out of victim mode. and it still won't work for them because they want to stay in victim mode. And you have to be aware that there are people like this that want to stay in victim mode, even if consciously they don't want to. They say, I don't want to be a victim. This is what they do. They say, I don't want to be a victim, but I am, and there's nothing I can do about it. I have no choice. And they believe it. And maybe for them it's true. Again, I'm not trying to discount someone else's issues or challenges. But I am saying that there are people that stay in victim mode and they don't want to get out of it. And all they want to do is vent about it. I want to use a different word, but it starts with a B. They want to be about it. They want to vent about it. They just want to speak it and be dramatic about it. Those are what I call sometimes professional victims. It's like they've made a living out of it or a career out of it, even though maybe they're not getting paid. But they've invested a lot into their victimhood. And so there are people like that. Hopefully no one that listens to this show or no one's friends that listen to them. But this person, she has a friend that might be maybe in that space. I don't know her situation. I didn't hear her side. But it is difficult when you're in a conversation and you don't get a break. And it's very one-sided. And when it's one-sided, like the way this person described, I call that therapy. She is using you as her therapist. She is using you as her sounding board, as her place to vent. And this may be very therapeutic for her. Maybe she's getting a lot out of it. But friends should not be this type of helper. I'm saying should, maybe that's the wrong word, but in general, friends shouldn't be this type of helper. I think it's important to have a balanced friendship where you both interact and you both contribute. And so the person who wrote, this is not balanced. This is a therapeutic situation where you can't be her therapist, even though it sounds like you're trying, giving constructive criticism, but she doesn't want to hear it. To me, this is what I'm getting from it. She doesn't want to hear that. She just wants to be validated in her righteousness. Again, I'm making some assumptions. I don't mean to. I'm just taking the generalized concept of someone who plays the victim all the time in this way. And when they dominate your time with all this, the bad stuff going on in their life, and they don't want constructive criticism or advice or anything like that, because when you give it, they'll come up with something else. They'll say, that won't work, and this is why. That won't work either, and this is why. You have to stop giving advice, because that's not what they want. So that's part one of my answer. You just have to stop giving advice, because people like that won't take it. They don't want that. From my experience, they do not want that. They just want you to listen and hopefully validate their righteousness. Now, where do you go with somebody like this? This is part two of my answer, I guess. For me, this is where I've gone, because I've had people do this to me, not as a coach, but as a friend or a coworker. They've done this to me. They complain, they vent on me or vent to me. They complain about their boss. They complain about their friends, their financial situation. And no matter what I've said to these people in the past, at least kind of people, it didn't matter because they knew they had a legitimate complaint and they wanted to feel righteous in their complaint, but they didn't want a solution. Well, actually one person did. In fact, this is what I did for one person. He wanted a solution, but he knew he couldn't get it. It was about a manager or a supervisor at the time. He was complaining about this supervisor and how hard the supervisor was on him. And he wouldn't stop. He just kept complaining about him. And no matter what we talked about, he would go right back to complaining about that supervisor. So I finally said, you know what? You're right. You are right about what you're saying. In fact, we need to march into that supervisor's office right now, and you need to give him a piece of your mind. Let's go do it. Let's do it right now. Let's go march into that person's office and give him a piece of your mind because you're right. That stopped it. That stopped it because I made him accountable for what he was saying. I said, we need to find a solution to this right now. Let's go do it. This is what happens when you have somebody that plays the victim and only wants to complain about it, but doesn't necessarily want a solution, is if they won't stop complaining and you want to get them out of that state, that, and you know, they're always in this state of complaining and things like that. If they're always in that complaining state and they don't want a solution, they're not even looking for a solution, and they're not doing anything about it, and all you are to them is their therapist, their sounding board, their pincushion, they keep poking you or something. If you are that person to them, then one way to stop it is say, let's go fix this right now. I will call that person right now. You hold them to what they're complaining about, and you make them realize that this is going to be resolved right now. You make them think it's going to be resolved right now, and you are there to help them resolve it. Why do this? Because you are testing, you are challenging them to prove that they really want a solution. Because if they are complaining about something and they really feel like a victim to it, a true victim wants a solution. A true victim wants closure. A complaining dramatic, or what I call a professional victim, doesn't want closure. They just want attention. They just want you to side with them, but they don't want closure. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm not. If you are a person that complains and the world is against you, you know, that's your prerogative. You could do anything you want. I'm talking about the person who does this all the time, not just one-offs. The person who has this almost the same complaints every single time, but never seeks a solution for it. Again, I don't think it's you listening to this show. Anyone listening, probably not you. Or if it is you, you're working on it. But if it's somebody you know, somebody you care about, maybe somebody you don't care about, somebody outside of you that is doing this, then I think one solution, or at least one attempt at a solution to at least stop them from dominating your time, is to hold them to what they're complaining about, to find out if what they're really a victim to is real to them. So if they are complaining about the person who overcharged them, and all they do is continue complaining about that person who overcharged them, continue, and every time you bring it up, it's that same story over and over again, and they take up all your time complaining about it, maybe you could say, all right, I'm going to call that person right now, the person who overcharged you, and I'm going to give them a piece of my mind. I want you to stay on the phone. We're going to get them on the phone right now. What's the professional victim going to do? They're going to say, no. No, it's fine. I don't want to talk to them right now. That's most likely what will happen. They don't want to resolve the problem. And because they don't want to resolve the problem, they're not going to want to do something that will actually resolve it, which means they just want it as a talking point. And if they have these talking points, they get the attention. People feel sorry for them. They play the martyr. Oh, woe is me. Everything happens to me. Everything is just so hard. The world is against me. I've sacrificed so much. And look at the results I get. This is how the world treats me. This is how that person treats me. And so when you have somebody that plays that role, they want to stay in that role. There's a dependency on that role. They are dysfunctional in the sense that they find, I hate to call it this, but enablers. They find enablers to allow them to stay this dramatic victim and this martyr. And when you have a person like that, they're not looking for solutions. There is a secondary gain for this behavior, meaning they are gaining something from being a victim. And that's a good question, like to this person who wrote, what is she gaining by playing the victim? I bet you can come up with an answer. What is she gaining? What is the positive result of her playing the victim? Because the first thing I think of is you are giving her that attention that she might be craving. And that could come from, you know, a fear of abandonment, a fear of rejection in her, and even in you. Maybe you have some people-pleasing tendencies, and you have a fear that you won't be liked if you were to say something about it. So you have what I call complementary dysfunctions. And almost every dysfunction I know has a complementary dysfunction to balance it out. The taker looks for the people-pleaser. The talker looks for the person who will listen. And again, in general, there are people that give and there are people that receive, and it can be healthy. So even if they're a taker, they're just a light taker. They're a light receiver. And that can be healthy. It can be a healthy relationship if both are on board with it or if both are okay with it. But I talk about dysfunction as a behavior that happens in excess. So if one person is a consistent talker and never gives the other person a chance to speak, and the other person is a very good listener and will listen and listen and listen and never interrupt because they think it's rude to interrupt or they think it's rude to say, hey, give me a chance to speak, then you might have two people with complementary dysfunctions. And that happens a lot. It's almost as if they enable each other's dysfunction. It's a typical codependent situation in that respect. You are dependent on each other for something that is being fulfilled in you, even though it might be driving you crazy like this person. So there are a couple of things I've given you that might be able to help you out of this situation. Well, one thing I've given you is holding her to it. If she is playing the victim and she's, oh, this bill is too high. Hey, let's call the credit card company right now and talk to them. Oh, no, I don't want to call them right now. Why not? I mean, you're complaining about it, so let's fix this. I don't want to see you in pain. I don't want to see you suffering like this. The reason I give you that as a possible way out is because the dramatic victim or the professional victim will very likely not bring up the same thing again because of their fear that you'll resolve it or you will help them resolve it. This can happen. She may fear that you will actually find a resolution, but that takes away her ability to be the victim, play the martyr, if that's what's happening, and seek your attention, seek being validated, seek feeling worthy through your listening. It depends on what's going on with her. I'm not here to analyze her, but that could be happening. She could be getting a lot from that, but in a dysfunctional way. So where do you go besides that? I think it's important to be a friend. Hey, I want to tell you about what's going on in my life. That might be something you say and see if she listens. And if she interrupts and then starts talking about her life again, you say, you know, that's great. And I totally understand where you are. And let me tell you what's going on in my life again. You bring it right back. But that may not be easy. And that may actually bring some aggression from her, this other person. And you'll find out if you truly have a balanced relationship or balanced friendship. So there are other ways to deal with this, but I wanted to give you something to start with. And there's one more thing. You said that she always asked for money. So here's how I would approach it. It may make you uncomfortable, but I think it's important the next time she asks you for money to say, you know, when you ask to borrow money, it makes me feel uncomfortable. Say something like that. I mean, that may not go well, but this is what you're going to find out. When you tell a friend that you're uncomfortable about something they're saying or doing, a friend, a real friend, one who loves you, one who cares about you, one who supports you, is going to say, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to make you feel uncomfortable. I won't do that again. That is off the radar. I will definitely not bring that up again. That's what a friend should say. A friend should be okay with your values, with your boundaries, with what makes you uncomfortable. They should be okay not violating those things. They should be okay and even want to treat you in the way that you want to be treated and not the way they want to treat you regardless of how you feel about it. That's my final piece of advice here, is that sharing something like that, sharing your truth, is one of the most wonderful gifts you can give to someone who loves you. It's true. Sharing your truth is a wonderful gift to someone who loves you, because what more would somebody who loves you want than to treat you the way you want to be treated? That is my personal favorite tip that I've ever told myself. This is something that I love to get from my girlfriend. She will say something to me that is a better way to treat her. In fact, we just had this conversation last night. Like, I used to use the term, this might be personal. I used to use the term babe with her because I think she's a babe. I think she's great. And she goes, when you use that term, it's very demeaning. It's very She didn't use the word demoralizing, but she says it's kind of sexist. And I never thought of it that way, but there's a lot of people that use it in a sexist way. Hey, babe, because she feels marginalized as a woman. She feels like she's been minimized down a notch or two under men. And I took that well. I thought, okay, that's true. I didn't call her babe a lot, but I've used that term because I thought it was a compliment to say, well, you're a babe, this is great. And she goes, well, that's different. She said, you're a babe is different than saying babe. One is, what'd she say, an adjective. One is a label. Like if you call me babe, I said, oh, it's like in the old days when the boss had a secretary, you know, it was a male boss and a female secretary, and he would say, hey, babe, come in here and get me some coffee. Like he was ordering her and controlling her. And she felt the need to do it, or if she didn't do it, she'd get fired, you know, whatever it was for them. But it became normal in society at that time, I think. I mean, I haven't done the research on this, but I believe it was more normal for the male-dominated leadership role in a lot of businesses to be sexist toward women or marginalize women or keep them at a notch below them or two notches or five notches below them so that women knew their place. This isn't my belief. This is, I believe, what it was like back then. There was a place that women felt they needed to be or were forced to be. And so this stemmed into a conversation about the word babe. And I'm not trying to get political. I'm not trying to bring up sore subject for anyone, but this is where she was. And this is what she conveyed to me, and I totally understand it. I totally support her understanding of this, and now I understand it, that she's been a woman all her life, and she's heard a lot of demeaning and belittling comments, and I'm sure some of them included babe. So I'm not calling her that anymore. That's not something she wants to hear. She doesn't take it the way I mean it, and I am totally supportive of that. I never want to offend her. I never want her to feel less than me or inferior to me. She is my equal. She is equal in every single way to me. I will always see her as my equal. So to call her something that offends her, that is the last thing I want to do because I love her. I support who she wants to be and who she is and who she wants to become. I support all of that because a good person, I believe, will support another person in who they want to be. They will support their individuality. They will support their values and their boundaries, or at least respect them. You may not agree on everything, but you should at least respect someone else's boundaries and values. Someone you love, that's what you do. And this is what I'm talking about, this person who wrote. If this person is your friend, when you say, hey, when you say that, when you ask me for money, it makes me feel uncomfortable. You know, I want to have this friendship, and I don't want it to be about money and borrowing money and things like that. So would you please, you know, not do that anymore, not ask that again, because I really love talking to you. Well, maybe that's a little too far because you don't get to talk, but that could be a start. Now, what I think will happen when you say that is that she'll say, I thought we were friends. I thought it wouldn't be a problem between friends to borrow money. That's what friends do. Now you know where you stand. Someone who doesn't honor you, doesn't respect what you want for yourself, isn't a friend. That might be hard to hear, but when they don't honor your time, I mean, you have to tell them, you're taking up a lot of my time, I have to go. When they don't honor your wishes, your boundaries, your values, that's not really a friend. That's someone who wants you to be who they want you to be in their life. They want you to play a role in their life so that they have, I don't know, someone to control. Something that they don't have to worry about because you're doing what they want you to do. They don't have to change, I should say. If they don't have to change and you have to accommodate them, that's not a friendship. It's not balanced. It's one-sided. The ship is listing. And when you have a listing ship in any type of relationship, unless somebody gets the lifeboat or starts getting the buckets out and taking the water out of the boat where you can actually work together, then you can balance the ship. Unless you both start doing that, unless you both are working on righting the ship again, you know, righting it into the right position where it's not sinking, not listing. When you're on board together and you're bringing it back to level C, the friendship can grow and prosper and strengthen, and it just stays on a good course. But if you express a value or a boundary and that person doesn't want to support that, then they don't support your independence. They don't support you as a person. They only support you to the extent that you will do what they want you to do. And that's not a friendship. That's not a relationship. That's very one-sided. It's a dominant, submissive situation. It's an authority, subservient situation. And when you're in that kind of relationship, unless you agreed to it, it can work in some situations, but most healthy relationships are balanced and not set up like that. So I hope I've given you something to work with. Thank you so much for writing that. When we come back, I'm going to read another message and we'll see where we go with that. And we'll see what happens. We'll see if I have anything to say that's of value for the next person. Thank you so much again for writing. Be right back after this. Speaking of therapy, there is a great place to go for therapy. It is called BetterHelp. They are today's sponsor. What better help can you get than one-on-one? When somebody is there to ask you questions and guide you through the challenges that you're experiencing, BetterHelp is such a great option. It's convenient, flexible, affordable, and it's entirely online. No waiting rooms, no driving there, and then having to sit in the car for 20 minutes afterward and process stuff. I mean, you're where you feel safe, where you feel comfortable, you can work with a licensed therapist, and BetterHelp is there to help you live a more empowered life. I mean, one of my philosophies is trying to figure out what allows me to feel like my best self or the best version of myself. This is what working with a therapist can do. They can help you get closer to the best version of you. For me personally, I need to take breaks throughout the day. I need to be able to get up when I've been a little bit overloaded, a little bit stressed, and just take a break. Overworking stresses the heck out of me. And if I don't take breaks, then I'm not giving my mind and my body what it needs. Sometimes we need somebody to guide us there. Sometimes we need somebody to help us understand what works for us. That's why I'm telling you about BetterHelp. In fact, go to betterhelp.com/brain and you'll get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, two words, BetterHelp, HELP.com/brain. Get 10% off your first month today. Welcome back. I'm going to get right into the next message that I received a while back. This person wrote, I enjoy listening to your show. The useful life skills that you teach has helped me to live a happier life. Oh, that's great. And I have a dilemma which I have not been able to resolve, and I thought I could ask you for help. It's about the relationship with my mom. Since my dad died, she's become dependent on others to help run her life. I'm her main helper. I have one brother who doesn't want to be involved. I love to help my mom. However, I feel I don't get any of the appreciation and respect that I deserve. She does not have any expectations from my brother, and she's even thankful when my brother let her visit his house. I love my mom. At the same time, I carry an uncomfortable burden of anger and resentment. She feels my resentment and observes my anger, and then she complains that I'm not respectful to her. I have a very good relationship with my brother. He told me that his counselor told him that our mom is narcissistic. I don't believe our mom is narcissistic, and I think my brother uses this excuse to suppress his guilt of not helping. My brother also told me that he observes I let my mom play emotional games like guilting me, which I completely agree. I love my mom. How can I help her without suffering? Thanks for your attention to my question. I love your show. Thank you so much for sharing that. And yeah, you are in probably the same type of position that I talked about in the last segment, where you might have some boundaries and values being violated, or you probably really do have some boundaries and values being violated, and you're not asserting yourself in a way to express that to someone that you need to express that to. So your mom sounds like she might need some help now that her husband's gone and you have stepped in to do that. But it sounds like you haven't set any ground rules for your helping her. It sounds like you might have a people pleaser syndrome. You know, that's one of the dysfunctions I talk about on many episodes of this show. It used to be me. People pleasers grow resentful when they don't receive any type of reciprocation for helping someone else, or for being accommodating, or for being nice and supportive. People pleasers often look for any type of acknowledgement, validation, or reciprocal behavior so that they can feel liked, accepted, loved, and just acknowledged, like I said, so that they can fulfill some sense of lack of self-esteem or self-worth. And I'm not saying that's you. You could be definitely beyond that, or maybe you're in the middle of it. Maybe that's how you are. I don't know. But that is often what happens, is that resentment grows from a lack of reciprocation, a lack of validation, acknowledgement. Everything you're describing tells me that you might be along the people-pleasing line. You are part of that. And I say that with all respect for you and where you are and what you're doing, because what you're doing is very kind and supportive and loving. To help someone else, to take care of them when they have trouble taking care of themselves. Very supportive and very loving. But you have to have boundaries too. You have to. You have to be in a space where you care about yourself, you respect yourself, you love yourself enough so that other people don't make you feel like you are dirt or not worthy of love and not worthy of kindness back and respect back, or even acknowledgement. Now, this doesn't mean that you should necessarily get acknowledgement, because my question to you is, what is your end game? What is your purpose in helping her? Because some people will have a purpose in helping another person without looking for acknowledgement, without looking for validation, because they care about that person and want them to be okay. You know, I think of assisted living. There are people that work in assisted living that care enough about elderly people, the people that can't get around on their own or can't do a lot of things on their own, and they need help living. I think a lot of people in that profession know that they are in sometimes a thankless position. Now, you are not in that situation. This is your mom. I mean, you could look at it that way. You could look at it and say, this is a thankless situation and I have to be okay with it. And if you did, it might release you from this resentment. You could also look at it as your mom isn't the kind of person that is vulnerable and says thank you. I mean, that could be it. She doesn't want to be in that vulnerable space of acknowledging you and validating and thanking you for what you're doing for her. Or your brother might be right. Your brother could be right that she's narcissistic, or she at least has narcissistic tendencies, or you've already told me that she guilts you, so that's an emotionally abusive behavior. So even if she isn't narcissistic, she's being emotionally abusive, at least in that respect. So when you feel guilted by someone, especially when you're helping them, boy, there's some narcissistic tendencies there for sure. It's not unhealthy to express a boundary to someone you love. It's not. It's not unhealthy to express that you would like to be treated a certain way. And again, someone who loves you should want that. They should want what you want for yourself, because that's what makes you happy. That's what makes you comfortable. That's how you feel love, and that's how you feel loved. So when you ask somebody to honor that boundary or value or whatever, you are asking them to treat you in the way that a loving person should treat another person. Now, with your mom, that might mean saying, hey, mom, don't try to make me feel guilty. I'm doing my best. I'm doing what I can for you. So please don't lay a guilt trip on me. Now, if she is emotionally abusive or narcissistic or has tendencies, she's probably going to say, I'm not trying to make you feel guilty. You're the problem, or something like that. You're the problem here. You know, I'm just telling you how to do it right because you're not doing it right. That could be what she says. And maybe she sounds logical, but it doesn't matter, because if you feel guilty and you say, hey, look, you're making me feel guilty, or at least you're trying to make me feel guilty, and that's not very nice. Could you please not do that? This is honoring yourself. This is telling someone how you would like to be treated. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with telling someone you love, someone you care about, someone who raised you, how you'd like to be treated, because you're an adult now. You know, as a kid, if you were a kid under 18 and still living in the home that you grew up in or whatever, you may not have as many options like that. You may not be able to say, don't treat me like that. Although, if they are treating you in a hurtful way or disrespectful way, it would be great if you could convey that and they would honor that. It doesn't happen too often. Parents like to think they know better. My parents did. And now that I'm an adult, I'd like to think I know better than kids. But when you're a kid, you know, sometimes you just want to be treated a certain way, even though there might be reasons that you are being treated that way. But you're an adult now, so you are allowed to say, hey, look, you're trying to guilt me. I can tell what you're doing, and that's not very nice. So please stop. It's just a very courteous thing to ask someone, or at least for them to do for you. Can I please ask you to be kind? Can I please ask you to be respectful? You may not want to say that. That might come off as aggressive, but I do agree with the idea of saying, hey, you know, please stop trying to guilt me. I'm here all the time trying to help you out, and it's just not a nice thing to do because I really want to help you out. But if you're going to continue to make me feel guilty, now here's the accountability part. If you're going to continue to make me feel guilty, then I won't be able to come over as often. I might be able to come over a few days a week instead of a whole 5 days a week. I might be able to come over 2 days a week. And then that is going to lead probably to another guilt trip. What? How could you do that to me? I'm your mom. I raised you. You wouldn't be here without me. Mom, you're doing it again. You're trying to guilt me into helping you when I'm doing it voluntarily. I'm here to help you. I'm here to make your life easier. If you don't want me here, then continue guilting me. Now, what I'm saying does take some fortitude. It takes some guts. It takes some courage. Because if you've never been like this, it's very hard to step into. Very hard to step into your boundaries and say, look, what you're doing is not acceptable to me. I don't appreciate it. I need you to stop doing that. Or will you please stop doing that? That's actually an empowering way to ask. Will you please stop doing that? Because it hurts me. It hurts my feelings. Oh, your feelings, you know, if you're going to get these kind of responses, oh, your feelings, oh, your feelings, look at me, you know, I can't walk and I need somebody to help me. So you're here and you're doing your job. So this is what you're supposed to do for your mom. She's going to say things like that if perhaps she's emotionally abusive or even narcissistic or has narcissistic tendencies. So your brother, don't discount everything he says, because guilting is an emotionally abusive behavior. And if he has had issues and he has chosen to honor his boundaries and not come to see your mom because she tries to do the same thing with him, then try to see that as your brother taking care of himself. Now you might say, but yeah, it's our mom. We should take care of her. If your brother is feeling abused, let's just put it this way. If you knew for a fact that she was narcissistic and she was abusive to your brother, would you feel the same way about your brother not coming over and taking care of her? Because in order for you to say, yes, I'd feel the same way, then that would be like saying, I don't care if he's being abused, he needs to take care of her. And that puts him in a very bad position, and it makes you feel like you're supporting the abuser and not, but then you're going to say, but it's my mom. It's our mom. We need to take care of her. It's our mom. I might be the wrong guy to ask, because I don't care who it is. An abusive person needs to be held accountable for their abusive behavior. And that accountability may just have to be you don't show up. I remember I had a client once, and he told his mom, look, I'm going to call you. And when I call you, if you mention anything about my partner, if you say anything bad about that person, and if you say anything bad about me or what I'm doing or my decisions, I'm going to hang up. And this is after years and years. I mean, his entire life of his mom pretty much dominating the conversation with her hurtful comments and making him feel bad, and he really can't do anything about it. And so he was in this very powerless position, and she kept her power by trying to control him, trying to make him feel bad, keeping him feeling guilty. When you are kept feeling guilty, you are kept feeling powerless. When you are kept feeling like it's your fault, you are kept feeling powerless. And so this is what people who are emotionally abusive or narcissistic, that's what they do. They want to keep their power over you. And if you are focused on yourself and everything you are doing wrong or not doing right, then they're in a place of power and you are powerless. So their goal is to keep you in that position so that they don't have to change. They won't have to change if you stay powerless, because you'll continue to be focused on yourself. So this is where you might be with your mom. She continues to keep you focused on yourself and probably makes you feel like you're obligated to take care of her, because that's what guilting is. It's making you feel obligated that you need to do something. You're supposed to feel guilty if you don't do that. And as long as you stay focused on what you're doing wrong, that's what's going to happen. She's going to take advantage of that over and over again because she knows she can. So the reason your brother isn't feeling the brunt of this is because he's shown her that he won't take it. He won't accept it. He won't accept her behavior. And because he is not accepting that behavior, she's not doing that behavior because it doesn't work on him. You can hear where I'm going with this. Unfortunately, it works on you. Her behavior works on you. And so she treats the person that it works on the way she treats them because she's getting her needs met. And she may have real needs, but it doesn't mean she's allowed to abuse you. There's no excuse. There's no reason for someone to abuse you. And that is abusive. Guilting someone is abusive, even if it's a minor offense. Somebody might say, well, yeah, but, people do that all the time. They try to make you feel guilty. It's an abusive behavior. It is a way to make someone focus on themselves and make them feel bad about what they're doing and who they are. And so when someone tries to make you feel guilty, they are causing you to stay in a lowered state. And that lowered state is what I would call disempowered. You feel powerless when you're in that lowered state. And if you're powerless, then you're more likely to continue doing what the abuser wants you to do. And you don't want to be in that state. This is why I started talking about this, about being loving and caring toward yourself. It is the ultimate in self-respect to look within and ask yourself, do I deserve this? Do I deserve to be treated this way? Am I worthy of this kind of behavior, or am I worth more? Because right now I feel worthless and I don't like that feeling. I come to her house all the time and I do all this stuff and she doesn't say a word. She doesn't thank me. She doesn't validate me. Well, that's why I asked what your end game was. If your end game is to take care of her, you may not get a thank you or a validation. But if she goes overboard and makes you feel guilty, you have to think about your values and your boundaries and what you want in your life. What do I want in my life? What kind of treatment do I want? Even if it's from my mom. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't take care of your mom, because I think that's very noble. I think that's a wonderful thing to do. But you do have to understand that there might be some aspects of your mom that you have to accept and you won't be able to get around. And you are also allowed to tell someone how you want to be treated. And so that might mean telling your mom, please don't do that. If you do that again, I'm going to leave. And again, that might be a tough place to get to, but I highly recommend you go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com, type in the word boundary, or just the word bound, because every variation of boundaries you're going to find. And look for my episodes and articles on boundaries. Those are so important, especially if you are a kind, caring, giving person. if you are a rescuer, if you are a fixer, if you are a people pleaser. A lot of these dysfunctions have their complements, like I was saying. If you're a people pleaser and the other person's a taker and ungrateful for what you're doing, or at least they don't show their gratitude, then you're going to complement their dysfunction or her dysfunction. And when you do that, it creates a complete cycle of codependence and continues to harm both of you. Because when you are completing the cycle of codependence and dysfunction and toxicity, you are both harmed. The abuser, if that's what she is, if she's abusing you, she is harmed because you are continuing to show up in a way that allows her to abuse you. And I'm not blaming you. I'm not saying that it's your fault. I'm just saying that if you put gasoline near a fire, the fire will eventually spread and maybe explode. So we have to be really careful what we're feeding dysfunctional people. And we want to be even more careful if we're feeding dysfunctional people with our own dysfunctions. We don't want to add fuel to the fire. And if the fire is already there, then we don't want to make the fire any worse. And we definitely want to do what we can to decrease the flame and show someone that we are not here to feed into the dysfunctional machine that is currently in place. And in fact, this is how we would like it to go forward from this point on. That's how I think you can help your mom without suffering. And it's a tall order. If you've never worked on boundaries, if you haven't told the world what you will and won't accept in your life, but it's totally worth the trip. The trip to honoring yourself, to honoring your boundaries, it's totally worth it. Because as soon as people know how you want to be treated, your relationships improve dramatically. And if they don't improve, they disintegrate. This is also a good thing, believe it or not. If you tell someone how you like to be treated and they do that, they respect that, that relationship improves. And if they don't respect that because you're not doing what they want you to do, then that relationship will disintegrate, and that might be the healthiest thing for both of you. Thank you so much for writing. I hope this helps. Listen to my episodes on boundaries, and sometimes we just need to take huge leaps of faith into the chasm of the unknown, and that might mean honoring yourself in front of somebody that you haven't honored yourself in front of before. And when you do, it's scary because you don't know what's going to happen, but I look at it this way. Do I want to continue living my life the way it's panning out now? Do I want to continue getting those results? Or do I want something different? And if you look at your past, you know, in this person's case, if you look at your past with your mom, do you like the results you're getting? Because if nothing changes, because she's not going to change, we already know this, I'm going to assume, she's not going to change. But if you change, you might actually get different results and you might actually improve the relationship. That's the scary part because you don't know if it's going to improve. Maybe she'll kick you out and say, never come over again. That's the risk. That's the risk we take when we take that leap of faith to honoring ourselves. That's the risk we take, is that we could actually lose a relationship that we care about. But we also have to take into consideration that the person who says they care about us, they might be unhealthy. They might be toxic. They might not be a good person in our life to remind us of our worth. They might not be that person. You are worthy and you deserve to be treated as worthy. Again, I hope this helps. Thank you so much for writing. And thanks for tuning into another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. We'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our patrons this week, Allison, Chelsea, Deborah, Somaya, Mary, Harriet, Andreas, Anna, Paige, Brian, Donald. Wow, I see these names every week and I swear I pronounce them differently, a little differently every time. So grateful for your financial support. These are what I call the patrons of the week. I read different names every week and they have offered to financially support the show through the patron program. If you are interested in supporting the show or you find value like these patrons do and want to give back, head over to moretob.com, like the overwhelmed brain, moretob.com. Thank you, patrons. I appreciate all of you. I'm very grateful. And for a show on how to deal with difficult relationships, we always talk about those here, but I do have a podcast called Love and Abuse. I've been doing that since 2019, and you might want to check that out if you're dealing with a difficult mom or a difficult spouse or a difficult coworker, whatever difficult relationship you might be in and you feel like you're being, I don't know, disrespected, or you feel powerless, or you're feeling guilty, or whatever it is that you're feeling in the relationship might be because somebody else is causing that and you're being conditioned into believing that's normal. And I don't want that to happen. So head over to loveandabuse.com if you're experiencing anything like that. It's all about control and manipulation and emotional abuse. And if you know you're the difficult one, let's just say that person's mom is listening. And she says, you know, I do make my daughter feel guilty and I probably shouldn't do that. How do I change that, Paul? Well, I worked on a program for about a year and a half called Healed Being, and that is now a fully comprehensive, very powerful, very effective program over at healedbeing.com. First four lessons are free, so check that out if you're in that situation and you know you're being hurtful or emotionally abusive and you want to change that about yourself. The lessons over there are literally life-changing. I have many, many stories. Check it out over at healedbeing.com. And I want to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, I just want to mention something about boundaries again, and that is when you honor yourself, you have to be prepared that a relationship that is important to you may dissolve. And that is a mental preparation. That is like something that sometimes you're not prepared for. Sometimes you think, oh man, I shouldn't have said anything because now that relationship has dissolved. And that's happened to me. I've had relationships dissolve because I expressed how I wanted to be treated. And it wasn't out of line. I wasn't being ridiculous with my request. It was just a simple request. Hey, would you mind, let's not make this relationship about money. That was one of them. Let's not make this relationship about money. You know, please just don't ask me that again. Let's just go forward because I love you. I even said that. I love you. And I don't want to make this relationship about money. And it's just uncomfortable when it's about money. Just like that email that I received in the first segment. It's not comfortable to me. So I don't want our relationship to be about that or have that as a part of, you know, our connection. And I forget how I said it, but that's pretty much the gist of it. I don't want our relationship to be about money or because it gets uncomfortable. And I just don't think that we should go in that direction. So I'm hoping you understand. I love you. I don't want that to be what we talk about, or I don't want to think about it. I don't want it to come up and have to deal with it when it comes up. Let's just not talk about that. Let's not talk about that situation. And sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes you have to honor yourself in a way that you know will be a little bit different than they want. It'll be a little bit in contrast to what's been going on, or a lot. It'll be a lot in contrast because, like this first person in the first segment, she said that she's always asking for money. She's always asking to borrow money. And when you have somebody that like that in your life and you have to make your boundary clear, that can drive somebody away. Well, you know, I can't ask for money. Well, I guess you aren't the friend I thought you were. Wow, that's more guilting. That's more abusive behavior. Who has time for this in their life? Who wants this in their life? I don't want that in my life. So I am willing to honor my boundary with risk. The risk is I could lose someone that I care about. Well, you shouldn't care about an abuser, right? No, it's not that at all. Some people don't know they're doing it. Some people don't know they're being hurtful to another person. They're just on autopilot and they have strange ways of communicating or different coping mechanisms than we do. And they don't think the same way we do. And they have a different upbringing than we do. And they just have different philosophies than we do. So sometimes we have to tell someone our philosophies. Sometimes we have to tell someone our boundaries and our values and let them know that this is how we appreciate being treated. And I hope that the relationship is strong enough to support that. Sometimes you just have to say that to someone. And, you know, my philosophy is you always find out someone's true colors when you say no. No, I don't wish to be treated like that anymore. So can we not do this? Can we not go there? Can you please just not say that to me anymore? Because this is like saying no to someone. No, I don't wish to be treated that way. You get to find out someone's true colors. So they are either going to say, I'm so sorry. I never want you to feel that way because I love you. I care about you. And I don't want this to interfere with our relationship because I want our relationship. They're going to say that, or they're going to say, what? And I'm going to embellish. You're saying something that is taking away my ability to control you. You're saying things that interfere with our relationship the way I want it to be. That could be the kind of response you get, at least an outline of the kind of response that you might get. And then you have to assess whether the relationship is worth keeping. It's like this person who takes care of her mom. Is that relationship worth keeping? Well, Paul, I have no choice. She's my mom. You might feel that way. And it might be true. Like maybe if you don't take care of her, she'll wither and pass away. I don't know. She might. Maybe not. Maybe she'll find another way. Maybe there's another choice that you haven't considered. But I do know, because you're the caretaker, because you're helping her, you have more power than you think. When you are the person's resource so that they can survive or at least live comfortably, have some sort of quality, higher quality of life, then you have more power than you think. So people that are taking advantage of you when you're doing that, when your mom's taking advantage of you or making you feel bad, even though you're doing all this work, you have the ability to say, look, you better stop that because that's disrespectful. And if you don't stop, I'm not going to come over. But Paul, that sounds like a threat. That's what you might say. That sounds like a threat. No, it's honoring yourself. It's showing someone how you'd like to be treated. It's self-respect. It's self-love. It's self-compassion. It's self-care. And it's even love, compassion, and respect and care for them as well. You're telling someone how you want to be treated, and you are letting them know that you care about this relationship enough to be honest with them. This is how much I care about this relationship. This is how much I want this relationship to continue to grow and to thrive. And I want to stay connected with you. I want to continue caring about you and loving you and supporting you. And this is what I have to tell you. This is the criteria for that. You know, don't use those words, but that's what it is. It comes down to that. This is the criteria for this relationship to continue. Please treat me this way, because I love you and I want this relationship to continue. And I don't want to be treated that way anymore. So let's figure this out. That might be something that is very hard to do, but if you don't do it, nothing changes. At least in this person's case, nothing will change. So you kind of have to bite the bullet if you want to change it. I mean, some people are okay with a situation like this. You might look at her and say, you know what? I know she's not going to thank me. I know she's always going to try to make me feel guilty, but I'm bigger than that. I'm going to take the higher road and I'm not going to let it affect me. If you are that type of person, you are a much better person than I am. You are more improved, more evolved than I will ever be, I think, because someone who can take that kind of suffering, like you said you were suffering. Someone who can take the non-gratitude and even the guilting and all the other abusive behaviors that might be going on, that's just such a resilient, tolerant person. And hopefully you can allow it to bounce off of you and see that perhaps she is not mentally well. I mean, she might be perfectly mentally capable and maybe she's very conscious of her behaviors, but it's sometimes easier to look at someone and say, you know what, they're not very mentally well, so I shouldn't take it personally. Boy, it takes a very special type of person to say, I'm not going to take it personally. Because even when you don't take things personally, those little resentments that you're talking about, they build up. Even if you're just able to just let it bounce off, but there's still a trickling going on inside of you. There's a little trickling of negativity that you might hold on to. I'm going to let that bounce off because I know she's not mentally well, but I wish she would say something different. I wish she would be more caring, more respectful. And that little I wish goes down inside of you, and it starts to get buried by other emotions and other thoughts. And you think you let it bounce off, but there's still a little bit inside of you, and it doesn't feel very good. And that's what lasts and lingers and comes up in sometimes destructive ways later, because eventually you'll get sick of being treated a certain way and you'll explode. You'll feel so angry or upset, and you'll finally lose it and say, that's enough. That's enough. Because it had been building, that little trickling, that little lingering feeling inside of you that can happen, that often happens with situations like this, where you think you're letting it bounce off of you, but it's still in there. And that's why it's important that you find a way to express yourself and say, this is how I'd like to be treated, or this is what I would like our relationship to look like. Can we do this? Can we work on it? Not everyone can. Some people can, some people can't, some people won't. And we just have to determine which relationships are worth being resilient and tolerant for, even though we're being negatively affected, and which relationships we want to improve. And we also have to decide if we're going to make the emotional sacrifice sometimes that might occur when we honor ourselves, knowing that doing so could disintegrate the relationship. And sometimes that is the only way to do it. And if you feel like you're stuck, this person who wrote, who has a member of their family, like she can't get away because that's my mom, and if I don't take care of her, nobody will, then you still have the power because you're taking care of her. And you could say, look, I'm not going to tolerate that. You don't get any pudding. You don't get any dessert this time because you're being mean to me and I don't like that. You might have to do little things like that. I'm not saying that you should. I'm just thinking, if this were me, that's what I would do. I would start honoring myself in tiny ways and letting her know there are consequences for being hurtful to me. I hope some of this stuff helps today. I hope this episode has given you some guidance. If not, I've got 9 years worth of more episodes you can listen to. So something out there has got to be helpful. But if you're still looking for the answers, always keep an open mind. That's where you step into your power so that you can create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.